What is going on? Bar Down Breakdown. And tonight we are joined by our homie Mike from Timeshares. You are listening to their song, Siren Sound, off their latest album, Limb. Mike, what's going on, brother?
What's going on, boys? How are you? Thanks for having me.
Super excited to have you join us. It's a perfect intersection of the hockey and music world. We were just talking for about a half an hour before we even started recording, and there's a ton of stories that I'm excited to get into.
I'm sure we could go all night if no one stops us.
100% we could, 100%. But one of the lives will.
But yeah, I guess since we just played a single off of Limb, let's start there. I know the album came out in September. So, you know, fill us in on the response, and, you know, have you gotten to play some of those songs yet live and so on?
It's been awesome. The backstory on the record is that it was ready to go before the pandemic. One of those albums. And you know, when the world kind of shut down, I think a lot of people put albums on the shelf to kind of wait and see if there was going to be some light at the end of the tunnel. I know our guitar player Max Stern put out his solo record in the middle of it. He just went for it, and I think that worked out great for him. We were hanging on to it for a little bit. We didn't have a label for it just yet. And I think if that had dragged on much longer, I think we would have just pulled the trigger and put it out. But, you know, things started to loosen up, and we felt it was the right time. We finally got it out. I mean, vinyl pressing is a nightmare right now. So that,
yeah.
The better part of 2022. And yeah, finally came out in September. The vinyls rolled in just in time for Fest at the end of October. I actually picked them up in Gainesville. Nice. A few hours before we played. And yeah, we've gotten to play. We came back from Fest and did record release shows on the East Coast. We did a couple shows with Captain We're Sinking in December. And then we just did a run with All the Way Lou on the East Coast a couple weeks ago, and those sets have been, you know, we've been playing a lot of stuff off the new record, and it feels really good. You know, we've been banned for over a decade now, so we've been hitting people with a lot of the same songs for a long time, and the response to the new stuff's been great. You know, obviously hanging on a record for that long, you wonder what people are going to think when it finally comes out, but it's been cool. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's pretty cool that you were playing record release shows with Captain We're Sinking, right?
Those were separate. Our record release shows were, the beginning of November after Fest.
Yeah.
And those were with, Teenage Halloween. And then the Captain shows, were kind of their comeback shows that they
had
to do.
Yeah. Cause I was gonna say, you guys put a split out probably what, 12 years ago at this point?
Years ago. That was like our first actual release after our demo.
Yeah.
That was 2010. Yeah. That came out around Fest 2010, October. Yeah. Kiss of Death Records. That was a long time ago.
I just love, you said that and I was like, wait a minute. I was like, I'm pretty sure they had a split with this band forever ago. I was like, that's pretty cool to have that full circle moment there.
For real. Yeah, we actually, so the one song that was on that we re-recorded for our first album, we ended up playing that at the shows, which doesn't come out as much as it used to. Just had to relive the past a little bit there, you know?
I love that. Now, unfortunately, Tom's not here tonight, but anyone that listens to Bar Down Breakdown knows that Tom is like the biggest supporter of Fest. Like he raves about that. He goes every year, and he lives in Orlando now, but he used to live on Long Island. So like the fact that he went like every year when he lived on Long Island is just like shows how much he loves that festival.
Oh, I know. And having gone down so many years from New York, I mean, it's a haul, you know, you feel, and coming home, you almost feel like you're driving uphill. It almost feels downhill on the way down and uphill on the way back, though. That's a long haul if you're not touring. And it's wild. And back in the day, like we'd pile seven or eight people into a motel room at the America's Best Value.
Yep.
for $70. It's changed quite a bit. You know, the hotel rooms down there are like $300 a night now. More than that, really. But people used to pile in and carpool and stuff into rooms and just make it work however.
That's punk and rock.
You mentioned that you guys played what, Fest 8 or 9?
Eric and our original guitar player Jay had started a band in college. We all went to college together in upstate New York. They started a band up there called The Knockdown. About halfway through our time in college, I ended up joining that band. There were some member changes. John was my friend from home, from the high school days, the local scene. And when we needed a guitar player for a tour, I called on him. He stepped in. We did some tours together. And then the singer from that band moved down to Florida. And we could either, be a band in multiple states and do things when we're able to, or we can, you know, start something fresh and really go for it. And then 10 years from now, be a band in different states that does stuff when we can. So here we are. That's how we ended up with this band all that time ago. So The Knockdown actually was our last show was at Fest 8. And then Fest 9 was the first timeshare show, or the first timeshare fest
show. Yeah. And then you played like every single one until like
we've played everyone since.
And we're like on Fest 24 or something, right? Or
21. It's legal to drink.
21. The 21? Last one was 20. So the fest coming out of COVID was 19, and that was it. Was a little tame. Mm-hmm. For Fest, I think, you know, people were still a little
wary,
a little cautious to travel, and it was cool. There was a little more elbow room. It definitely seemed more chill, but it was cool. And then I think for Fest 20, they really wanted to bring it back to the standard, and it was pretty packed, pretty wild down there. It was awesome.
Love that. Super cool. Yep. So I guess since we're talking festivals, you guys got a pretty busy summer. I guess, can you fill us in on what timeshares got cooking for the festival circuit?
We're heading back to Europe. I think it's our fourth time over to Europe. And we're playing Booze Cruise in Hamburg. For the second time, we played in 2018, which might have been the second Booze Cruise. We're also doing Beard Attack Fest, which is also in Germany. I'm spacing right now.
It's Leipzig.
There's a festival in Zurich that we're playing that same weekend as Beard Attack. I should have been prepped on this.
Let me see if I can find it really quick while you're thinking.
Yeah.
But either way, you said that you guys have done the Europe circuit a few times before.
We have actually. So we went in 2013 and 2015, and both of those tours were just over a month, which was wild.
Wow.
At the time, that was like the way to kind of make your flight money back. Was to play a ton of shows and grind it out. We did our first tour was with Antellectual, which is a Dutch kind of skate punk band, like politically minded, really awesome band. And they were the perfect band to do our first European tour with. They knew the ropes. They're a little bit older than us and kind of showed us the way. And then the second time over, we played Grozrock in Belgium, which was awesome. We played like the same stage as Bane.
Oh, that's sick.
I have a video on my phone of Bane playing like from the side of the stage, and it's just carnage, just a million stage dives. And I'm like standing next to one of the guys from My Chemical Romance, who's like in a big camo coat, just like, you know, incognito almost. That was insane. That was one of the wildest days. And then we did a week in the UK, came back over, did a few shows, and then we did the second half of that tour with Ostpie from Austria, who were just the best dudes. They're now defunct, but just they were a European mainstay band. Just they played Fest a few times too.
That's sick.
The best dudes.
So how would you compare those like European punk festivals to like some of the ones here in the States, like, you know, like we mentioned Fest?
I think that I think Booze Cruise is awesome. Our buddy Stefan has been putting that together, and it's definitely like kind of modeled off the Fest and Pooza Fest, you know.
So like a multi-venue kind of layout?
Yeah, and they do have bands play on boats.
That's cool.
Sick. Yeah, they have. We've only been over that one time. We didn't play on the boat. The thing is, like, the boat leaves, and then I think two bands play, and they do a circle around, and they come back. So you gotta get on the boat. They can only take so many people, and
yeah,
then you're out there for I think two sets, and then come back. So that's pretty wild. We never actually got on the boat. We were a little. That was our third trip over to Europe, which was kind of a short one. We did like a week of shows leading up to it, and then we did two sets at Booze Cruise. And we were just Hamburg's a huge city. We were kind of walking around getting our bearings, but it was cool. We never made it to the boat. Maybe we'll get out there this time. We're looking forward to it. So
it's not like predetermined. Like you could just be like, oh, we're gonna muscle our way onto this boat and play a set.
I don't know. So where the boat leaves from was actually a decent a walk down from the venue that we were kind of posted up at for most of the weekend. And yeah, we just didn't end up going down there. Didn't see if we would have to fight our way onto the boat. I don't know what the deal is. I saw some video of Pew 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 playing on the boat, and it looked cool. I mean, it's definitely like a cool experience that we haven't had yet, playing on a boat.
So does it take you like up that river into like the North Sea, or does it just kind of like go up the river, turn around?
I'm not sure. I would guess it's probably like if you got two sets happening, it's probably like an hour loop or so. I don't know how far they make. It's a pretty small boat. I would think like the capacity that they let on is probably only like 40, 50 people, if that.
Yeah. Cause it's like, it's, I mean, honestly, like when you look at, for anybody who hasn't been to Germany, it's like right on the river,
Elbe,
or I don't know what it's called. The river's called, it's like Elbe or something like that.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but yeah, it's a huge port town.
Yeah. You literally just take the river out and it just goes right out to the North Sea. Like we're like Denmark and all the Scandinavian.
Our second tour, we actually took the ferry. I think we played Hamburg and then took the ferry up and played Copenhagen.
That's sick.
So sick. But the currency exchange for that one show, that was very confusing. That was showing up for our first show in Denmark. And it's like, no, a record is 200 kroner or whatever it was. Yeah. And then trying to make change, it was like, I don't know.
Yeah. PayPal or whatever that European app that they use is.
Yeah.
Whenever I have to like use a different country's currency, I just like blindly hand over my money. I'm like, please don't take advantage of me.
Yeah. It's free. Yeah. Depending on where you exchange to is you definitely don't want to go to one of those currency exchange places in the airport. They will
destroy you.
Yeah. They'll take you for all you got.
Yeah.
Touche. Well, so we're excited. We have a good thing going with Europe, and it's always fun to be there. Everybody's super nice and they take good care of us. So
now, since you guys are like truly veterans and you've been doing this for like 13, 14 years at this point, do you guys kind of view these tours as like kind of your vacations, since, you know, obviously you are probably in your mid 30s and have like real jobs and real obligations, and you're like, tours are just our PTO that we
have. Oh, buddy, you have no idea. In the corner out in the world and rode around in some really shitty vehicles and did a lot of stuff. And yeah, now between the four of us, we've got like six jobs, 2 degrees in progress, 2 weddings coming up this year. And you know, it's really hard to do stuff, but any chance we get, it's awesome. Like the chemistry that we have as a band and just as friends, anytime we get together, it's right where it left off the last time. So yeah, we're excited to go back to Europe. Stefan from Booze Cruise kind of was instrumental in getting the ball rolling on that and getting us, we're going like a week after Eric's wedding. So, and,
That's the perfect place to go honeymooning. Yeah.
Shout out to his fiance Karen for being cool with that.
Just go tour Germany for a little bit. You're going to Leipzig already. You're going to Hamburg. Yeah. Just go to Düsseldorf and Munich.
Yeah, just a quick 2 weekends of festivals with a week in between. Quite different from the like 33 days or whatever it was the first two times.
Yeah. Just,
like 1 day off in the whole second half of the tour. just going hard.
Just tell them to take the ferry over to Copenhagen. It's like a little fairy tale.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. I thought that was so cool. So, yeah.
Honestly, I feel like that's the mindset that I wish a lot of bands had. Like, even from the early on, like, right. Every gig is a gift. I love that. Yep. Because, you know, there's a small percentage of bands that are going to, like, make it and be able to have, like, a legit career from playing music, especially right. In this scene, right. Like this genre of music.
Oh yeah.
And bands like end up having like feuds between the members in it. And they like, you know, will go through and blow their whole savings and go into debt because of their bands. But like, if you're able to just like do it as like a passion and play the shows, like when you can, and like not necessarily revolve your whole life around it.
Right. I think, don't get me wrong, we get heated at times. And I definitely would have probably more money in the bank if I wasn't playing in the band. But, you know, it is awesome. We have amazing stories and memories and friends that we've made
yep.
through this. So, yeah. And you know, it's just stopping or not doing it has like really never, felt like an option, even if we can't do it as much. But you know, at this point, we have to be a little more picky, yep. weigh the offers as they come in and, you know, figure out the logistics and, yeah, anything that we can make work is just so much fun and so awesome. So that's where we're at right now.
I love that.
I don't think the making it, I think that went out the window a long time ago.
and I don't necessarily mean it like, oh, the band made it, but I mean like,
oh yeah,
being able to
do this,
literally do that as your full-time job and have like a house and a family with the money you make from your band. Sure. Like the percentage of bands that can do that is very slim.
To get to that point, you have to have, you know, a lot of help and the folks helping out, they're not doing it for free either. So there's got to be a big enough pie for everybody to share. And, you know, you really got to have something wild that, you know, we don't know quite how that comes about, but we are happy with the music that we're making and just happy that people listen to it. It's cool.
Absolutely.
No one has to listen to it.
Yep. And you got people over in Europe who give a shit, which is cool as hell too.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Cool. Yeah. So I do kind of want to just go back to the, you know, the formation. You kind of mentioned how it was a little bit of a merger of a few different projects, but, you know, you mentioned how you had your roots in the Hudson Valley region of New York. And if I'm doing the math correctly, like 2008, 2009, that's like when We Are the In Crowd was blowing up from that area. The Morning Of was blowing up from that area, like the Newburgh area. So, like, do you have any, like, stories of, like, those bands and you guys crossing paths because, like, it was, like, the same stomping grounds?
I don't really know those bands too well. We always talk about Coheed and Cambria is Rockford County band. And their first album came out when I was in high school. And I was in high school, I was like a very, I mean, I went to high school 2000 to 2004.
So you're saying Rockland County, which is Rockland, like the southern part of the Hudson Valley. So
that,
like,
that's where I'm at. Yep.
Okay. So
me and John are both Rockland County boys.
Okay. Sometimes I consider that like Westchester. It's so close to Westchester.
We're right. Yeah. We're right across the river.
Yeah. Okay. We're those bands that I mentioned,
New Jersey and then upstate. So
yeah, those bands I mentioned were more like the, I guess, northern part of the Hudson Valley, closer there to like Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, Poughkeepsie's like 45 minutes away. We'd go up there to the Chance. I saw Against Me up at the Chance.
Sweet.
Like touring on Eternal Cowboy, playing with Murder by Death in the small room at the Chance. Went up there a few times and saw Coheed. I was like super into old punk, like in high school, like Dead Kennedys and Minor Threat and like the old 80s stuff. And then, you know, at the time you're in the peak of Drive Thru Records and Warped Tour and all that. So the two worlds were kind of, you know, a lot of my friends were into that stuff. And I kind of slowly got into like Coheed, you know, bands like Thrice and Thursday were put out, you know, War All the Time and Artist in the Ambulance came out at the same time and they toured those together. I was at a bunch of those shows. So there was definitely some intersection. Senses Fail grew up right down the road
in Jersey,
right in Jersey. Yeah. Like 15, 20 minutes from here. So, you know, I kind of mixed into those worlds. Coheed's, their first record blew up. And by the time the second one came out, I was still in high school, but it was definitely an anticipated record and they were a big band.
Oh yeah.
I think like at the time too, like their previous project Shibuti was such an iconic band in that area too.
It was
that they, when they came out with Coheed and Cambria, like you can even, I think they uploaded like one of those videos on YouTube of one of their first Coheed and Cambria shows. Packed and people bananas.
That was actually
second stage.
Yeah, John from Timeshares and I, we went to different high schools about 20 minutes apart. But we would go to shows in Nyack, which is the other corner of Rockland County, which is a triangle. And we would go to shows at the Nyack Center. They would call it the back door because they'd. It was the side door that we'd go in to go to the shows, but they called it the back door. And that was
so it's started. Like a whole Boy Meets World situation. Is it a backyard or a side yard?
Yeah. That was put together by Claudio from Coheed when he was in high school at Nyack High School.
Nice.
And those were some of the first local shows I ever went to. That was like the first time that I saw people my age or slightly older, you know, playing small local shows and thinking like I could try to do this. And that's like where I met John. And I remember seeing a show. It might have still been Shibuti or it might have just been you know, transitioning into Coheed at that point. Yeah. But it was packed for that, you know, pretty small place. And that was the first time I saw people windmilling.
Loose change.
Yeah, it was like oh wow, this is people love this. That was That was cool. I'm glad I got to see that. I saw Claudio play at a gazebo right on the Hudson River, probably between the first and second record coming out. There was definitely a buzz about that band in the area. We walked through the mall. We'd walk on Friday nights through the mall, hand out flyers for our crappy local shows coming up, and that record would be blasting out of the Hot Topic or the Zoomies, yep, pretty much on repeat. So
it blows my mind that, and I'm gonna sound super old saying this, but that the younger generations aren't gonna experience going to a mall and just handing out flyers for a local show.
I know,
and I feel bad that they're missing out on that, because that's how we met so many different influential bands that were in a local scene, was just going to the mall and just literally going into a Hot Topic and be like, can we put our flyer here?
Yeah.
And it was just super cool. Just like, it felt like a community, and it actually felt like, you know, people had nothing to do on the weekends and they would just go to a local show, and you would have like a line of kids out the door waiting to come in to go listen to some band called, like, I don't know, Handgun Romance or something stupid like that. And yeah, it was just a completely different time, and
exactly what I came up in.
Yeah. And I feel like we're slowly getting back to a situation like that, but I think more people just need to be like, I'm gonna go to a fucking shitty bar and go listen to a punk band for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it was in Zoomies, they had the old school TV and like the wooden furniture that they had the crappiest couch that you could sit and play Tony Hawk on, and we would leave flyers right on top of that TV. And that was just, you know, this was pre-MySpace, pre any kind of like networking website. I think we had like some kind of GeoCities website for our band that, you know,
you're on Pure Volume or.
Yeah, this was before that.
Oh, yeah. Like,
there was maybe mp3.com. And oh, my God. It was, it was a different time. I hate like sounding like.
Like you're old, but.
I hate sounding like I'm a curmudgeon. I hate being like the things were better. Like, you know, we are where we are right now. It is crazy though, because, you know, I don't like to rely on social media to get the word out for shows, but, you know, if I walk down to the mall and hand out paper flyers now,
people think you're passing out a manifesto.
But yeah, as it is,
you're going to find people to pass them to.
Yeah, we have shows that we post about on Instagram or Twitter or whatever, and somehow they still slip under the radar, and people will find out the day of, and, you know, it's just what it is. We're trying to figure it out, how to reach our people. You know, we have our followers on our platforms there, and yeah, it sucks kind of feeling like you got to fight to get stuff in front of them, but that is what it is. That's where we are, and we're trying.
It's still easier than going to the mall and handing out flyers.
It is. Or like, I used to go into 7-Eleven and use the copy machine there.
Oh, God, yeah.
Wait, and, what? And then, why was there a copy machine in 7-Eleven?
I don't know. You had to pay at the counter. Like, they had like a little counter to the side of the register that kept track of how many copies you made, and then they'd bill you right at the register. It was stupid. Using a glue stick, cutting shit out and making a flyer, and then copying 100 of them or whatever. And I don't know. I
still need to see the 7-Eleven with a copier in it. Like, what the hell was going on in upstate New York?
Yeah, I don't know. That's what we did there.
There's no Kinko's. They're too loony for Kinko's.
Got to cross the state border into New Jersey to go to Staples.
So just out of curiosity, what school did you guys go to, and college you go to in upstate New York?
I went, we went to Eric, our original guitar player, Jay, and I went to Oneonta State which is a SUNY school in, it's like in the middle of the state. Like if you, I know there's like Long Island people will call anything north of the city upstate. People from Syracuse will say, we're not upstate, we're central New York. I think, you know.
No, it's a weird spot. It's like between Binghamton and Albany.
Oneonta is halfway between Binghamton and Albany on I-88. It's 20 minutes from Cooperstown, which is where the Baseball Hall of Fame is. It's right up. It's right in the mountains. It's a two-college town, Hartwick
College. Well, can I tell you, I went to a pretty epic show at SUNY Oneonta in 2009.
Really?
As Tall as Lions, Gabriel the Marine, and Fireworks.
Wow. We actually had Fireworks come through while we were in school, and they played in a classroom.
That's awesome.
I saw them on campus, but it wasn't in a classroom. It was like in your like student union.
Yeah. So the student union had a pretty big ballroom with a big stage.
There was a stage.
We actually played with Title Fight in there after we graduated. But other than that, there was like a multicultural center on campus that was a pretty big room that we could get for bands coming through. But then there was also a classroom in the fine arts building that kind of had like kind of like tiered levels going up where the students would sit. It was almost like a lecture hall, but kind of smaller. And we'd have bands come through and play right on the floor, and then the crowd would kind of be looking down at them. And I definitely remember Fireworks playing that room. We had No Trigger,
sweet
Jenna Berlin, which was the band that later formed into Restorations, came up a bunch. We know those guys. Like it's amazing that they're like still in our lives, and they're working on a new record, and we see them in Philly all the time. And it's just like, we go all the way back to when we were in college and you guys were touring through. I remember a friend of ours that booked shows on campus, putting Jenna Berlin for fans of Taking Back Sunday and on the flyer, posting it all over campus. And then it was my first time seeing them, and I thought that band was fucking awesome. They didn't sound anything like Taking Back Sunday. And our buddy was just like, I just wanted people to come out.
Yeah, that's what you did. I remember seeing flyers like back in the day for like the Wonder Years, and it would be like for fans of like Newfound Glory and like the Movie Life. And I'd be like, they don't sound anything like any of those bands. I'm like, this is the Wonder Years.
It was a small town. You had to get everybody out that you could.
Yeah, that you could.
We snuck those guys like into the dining room through the freight elevator a couple times so that they could get a nice meal on tour. You know, it was those were good times. That was, you know, coming from Rockland County, you know, we weren't too exposed to DIY. You know, everything was either at a community center or we would do like all ages shows at a bar at 2 p.m. on Sundays.
Yep.
There was another guy in town that would book, you know, like smaller pop punk shows and stuff, but it was never really like that true DIY. Like this is, you know, completely, you know, grassroots here. And when I got to college and joined the Knockdown, that was like first time going out of town, playing house shows, playing shows with like Lemuria. And there was a band, Pot Boiler, that they were in New Paltz, another SUNY town. And those guys went on to be in Get Bent, and then Get Bent, one of them ended up in Iron Sheik. So, you know, getting into that world was just super different and cool coming out of Rockland County, because we were in kind of a spot where like we're so close to New York City, but also, you know, pretty far. Like for me in high school, like before I drove, if I wanted to see a show in New York City, it was an all-day affair. I had to get on the train and transfer and then do some walking and figure that out and make it back to the train before the last train. So most of the time I just didn't do it. So I'd just stick to the local shows. But like, who's coming through like almost New York City and not going to New York City? It was just all bands like from within an hour or so away. So, you know, a little bit kind of secluded in that aspect, but it was definitely cool to see a different side of it and get into the DIY world.
Yeah. I went to SUNY Cortland, and I feel like I was like the only kid other than my wife that appreciated this type of music. Like it was not like Oneonta at all.
I actually played hockey at SUNY Cortland, not for SUNY Cortland. When I was in high school, I played at SUNY Cortland. So here we go.
It was a pretty nice ice rink. It was probably, I would say, like 6 or 10,000 people you could probably hold in there.
Yeah.
Pretty decent. Cool. Yeah. So I definitely want to dive into your hockey background as well. You know, you got your name, Coach Mike, right there on the screen. So I want to hear a little bit about your coaching days and also just you as a fan, you know, being in Rockland County is kind of split up. You know, you could go either way, really, which team you root for. So,
yeah, of course.
I definitely want to hear what got you hooked on the Rangers and all that. But before we do that, I do want to tell everyone about our sponsor, DraftKings. So the action never ends at DraftKings Sportsbook, especially this summer. With tons of ways to bet on all your favorite sports, you can fuel your fandom and feel the heat of the season like never before. Plus, right now, DraftKings Sportsbook is giving new customers risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's right. Make your first bet up to $1,000, and if it doesn't win, you'll get another shot to cash in. You can throw down on all the major action for baseball, golf, MMA, and more. Plus, with same-game parlays, spreads, money lines, over-unders, and props, your betting options feel endless. So, you know, the Stanley Cup playoffs are coming up right around the corner. Trade deadline's happening. So, definitely can place some exciting bets all throughout the playoffs. So, bet on best of all, DraftKings is safe, secure, reliable. You can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Make your first deposit and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's promo code THPN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. So cool. Mike, I guess, you know, we kind of hinted at it already. What made you go for the red, white, and blue with the Rangers?
My dad is a lifelong Rangers fan. When he was a kid, really my first memory of hockey was him putting the Rangers games on probably around 91, 92. I was, you know, in first grade. He played baseball. He was a baseball guy. He actually never played hockey, but was a big hockey fan. And, you know, it was like, the timing was just right. Like 92, 93, I started kind of getting into it. And 94 was the season that I really got hooked on it. And we all know how that ended. It was just the coolest thing for a second grader to experience bringing home the cup. You know, that was like, I could tell you the whole roster from that year, jersey numbers and all. I loved it, and I knew from watching hockey all the time then that I wanted to play goal. I thought that was I still to this day think that's like the most beautiful era in goaltending between Richter, Brodeur, Patrick Waugh, Hasek, just all those greats from that. It was just awesome to watch. I just loved it.
Yeah, I was talking to someone recently. Like, I really think that was the heyday of the NHL. Like, the mid-90s to late 90s was just, like, at its all-time peak. And I don't know if hockey could ever get back to that. Maybe it will. But
yeah,
I feel like it was, like, way more in pop culture. And casual sports fans were talking about hockey.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's really become even more niche and like niche down than it ever has been.
I agree. And here, like outside of New York City, you put on sports radio, they don't talk about hockey at all.
Not even in New York City. Like that's like the big ongoing joke on the Boomer and Carton show is like,
exactly.
Boomer Esiason tries to talk about the Rangers.
Craig they Carton go silent on him, right?
No, they were like, nobody cares about hockey, Boomer.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then they'll have to move on.
That's crazy to me. I love the fan. I remember when the Rangers went on a run in 2014 and 2015. They had two good runs. We were actually in Europe when they lost to the Lightning in the conference finals. That was, I think, the year after they went to the finals and lost to the Kings.
Yeah.
That year that they went to the finals, I would turn on Steve Summers and listen to him talk after the game for an hour. That is totally gone. Like you turn on the fan now and they'll find any way to talk about football, even on Wednesday afternoon before they'll mention the Giants and Jets can be out of it and they'll be making lists of quarterbacks that are up for free agency that who do you think they should go for now? And it's like, you got three hockey teams in the area that are
in the playoffs.
The Rangers are right up there. It's wild to me that it's fallen off so much. But you're right. I mean, hockey back then was a much more pop culture mainstream thing, and
which is wild to think also with like how like cable packages and stuff work. Like hockey was sometimes buried. Like they had like the Saturday Fox game or whatever, the Sunday Fox game. But like, other than that, unless you had a pretty premium cable package, you didn't even have necessarily access to watch the games, where now it's way more accessible.
Yeah.
But yet it seems like only hockey fans are talking about hockey.
Right. TNT's gotten into the mix now. They'll do like the doubleheader on TNT. The Rangers played on ABC the other day, I think. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
It blows my mind too, like in that New York market, that they would rather talk about the Giants and the Jets than or talk just, about like, the Rangers.
Or just like the NFL or the NBA.
I can kind of understand for the most part, but at the end of the day, and this is just me talking crap about New York teams, the Giants and the Jets don't even play in New York.
It's very true.
They don't even play in New York. Meanwhile, you have the Rangers and the Islanders and the Sabres. They all play in New York. Yep. The Rangers actually play in the city, and then you have the Islanders. They play on Long Island, but those are actual teams in the physical state of New York.
Yeah, but Buffalo, New York's not really in New York. Like, let's be real.
It's basically Canada, but it's still New York.
Buffalo is my hockey home away from home, so I have a lot of love for the Sabres.
I'm not trying to say. Like, Buffalo is awesome. Like, I've caught Buffalo's road awesome. Games in Buffalo, and it's sweet. Yeah. But I'm saying
they're
like,
not New York.
If you think anyone from sports radio is going to talk about the Sabres, like, freaking out of your mind. Just
no, I mean, hey, you know, it was the same thing we were talking about the Bills a few years ago, and look at the Bills now.
No, but I'm saying, like, literally Buffalo is, like, 8 or 9 hours away from New York City.
From New York City.
It's literally, like, a different state away.
Yeah, it would be like Orlando talking about the Thrashers.
Yeah,
exactly. Or what was the Thrashers? the Preds. That's about 9, 10 hours away.
Yeah, it's a different world. But so it's funny that you mentioned that Stanley Cup, series and being in like second grade. So like, I'm pretty sure we must be exactly the same age. So you graduated high school 2005, I'm guessing.
2004.
Okay. Yeah. So
yeah, I was young for my class though. So I probably could have been a 2005 graduate just as easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember vividly, there was a New York Rangers pop-up shop that, like, after they won the Stanley Cup in one of the strip malls in my town.
So what town was that?
Deer Park on Long Island.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it was, like, every town on Long Island basically had the same thing. Like, they all had their own pop-up shop after they won where you could buy like that black and white Rangers Stanley Cup hat. That's like so historic.
I have it right there.
Yeah.
It's on my shelf.
It's like the most historic hockey championship hat I can ever imagine.
Mike, I think you need to just show it.
Don't look anything like that anymore.
Mike, just show it, because Mike's been talking about this for 10 episodes.
Oh, where is that? I just saw it before.
It doesn't exist.
No, it's epic. It really is.
Here it is, boys.
Yeah, that's
it. Oh, nice.
Dude, it's so epic. Like
It is, right?
It really is.
It's kind of hideous.
It's kind of hideous.
It is. Championship hats don't look like this anymore. I mean, no. This is the one that I wore to school.
It's the 90s, though. That's the 90s. But
what I'm trying to say is, let's say if the Rangers and Islanders won the Stanley Cup today, there would not be that response. Like, there would not be these pop-up championship stores where all you could buy was that hat and the shirt. And that was it. Like, that was the whole store.
Yeah.
And like I said, every town on Long Island basically had the same thing. And I'm like, in the year 2023, if the Rangers go on to win the cup this year, I guarantee that that does not happen. And that's just going back on my point. Like, hockey has niched down so much that, like, that store would do terrible. It would fail. And
also, 2023, you can just order that shit.
Yeah.
Also true.
Well, it was like that with the Bolts too. Like, when the Bolts, they went back to back, I tried to go to Lids just to find like a Stanley Cup hat or just something from the Stanley Cup. You couldn't find anything.
Wow,
that's like, anywhere. And it's like, it's you're just like, this is like a, not only did they win it once, they won it twice back to back, and you can't find any of this stuff anywhere.
Yeah. They have a great you know, fan base. People love it.
No, they have a terrible fan base.
No, I don't know. I figured they were pretty beloved.
Tampa?
not the case. I don't know.
No, they don't even know the first thing about hockey.
They sell out like every game though.
They sell out,
but yeah, no, you know,
Tampa fans are some of the dumbest people I've ever met.
All right, you're talking about your own fans.
Sorry for my
fans. I'm not going to say that about my Islanders.
Oh, boy, big chirps going on here.
They are. I love going to Amalie games with God. They're the dumbest people. They start yelling at other teams. They're just like, I'm trying to remember the last game I went to. It was either a Rangers game or a Blackhawks game, and Tampa was just chirping the other team. And I was just like, pretty sure they're going to destroy us this game. This is when we still had like Ben Bishop in net, and it was just, we weren't a good team.
Big Ben, what a fucking monster.
He's so big. What, 6'3", 6'4", in net?
He might have been taller than that. He might have been like 6'6". What a huge dude.
He took up the entire net, basically.
Yeah. It's me, I was an inch taller than John Van Beesbrook. So,
yeah.
And that was normal for the time.
Well, Mike's a goalie for his beer league team. He's 5'10".
And not me.
No.
The singer of his band.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
He's a goalie too. And he's about 5'10", 5'11", maybe on a good day.
Never get a contract now.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
So I guess let's talk about your coaching days, because, you know, I think coaching a AA team is probably, like, other than juniors in Canada, like, some of the most competitive hockey you can play in the United States, like double and triple A.
Well, it's Bantam AA, so it's 14U.
Okay.
They are, you know, eighth graders and freshmen in high school. But it is one of my favorite levels of hockey, just in the world. I think Bantam AA is such a cool level of hockey, because you're in your second year of checking. It's a national tournament bound level, and it's really, I mean, you know, I did I've been around Pee Wee hockey, which is 12 and under. That hasn't really started to, it can, but it doesn't really look like hockey fully yet. It can, but Bantam is really where it starts to integrate the systems, and you start to see, a very deliberate forecheck or D zone coverage or power play. I love Bantam AA hockey. I could talk about it all day. I love being around it. It's great.
So how'd you fall into coaching? Because I also have some friends who coach at similar levels, maybe a little older or a little younger.
Mm-hmm.
And they love the actual coaching aspect, but mm-hmm. the parents and the politics that go around that as well is sure. why they got out of coaching.
Yeah, I understand that. I coach with my brother Tom, who is 3.5 years younger than me. He was also a goalie. He had a really good playing career after high school. He played a year of juniors outside Philly, and then he played D3 at Becker College in Worcester, Mass. And after that, he came back home to go to grad school and decided he wanted to get into coaching. And he got in touch with his buddy Andrew Ojeda, who he had played with basically from mites up to high school. And they decided to get into it. They did 2 years of peewee. And I probably helped out on the bench a handful of times. And then they moved up to Bantam A. And that year he was like, I registered you for USA Hockey. Here's what you got to do. You got to get a background check and complete this course and everything. You're on the staff with us. And that's how I ended up. We did.
So you had no choice. You were just like, oh, yeah, I guess I'm a coach.
Yeah, we did 2 years at the Ramapo Saints, which was the team we grew up playing for, because the rink was 7 minutes from our house. Because in the 90s, if you had a rink 7 minutes from your house, that's the team you played for.
Yeah.
It wasn't as normal as it is now to travel a bit more. So that was where we started coaching. And after 2 years there, we made a switch to the North Jersey Avalanche, which who we're with now, out of Hackensack, New Jersey. And this has been our fifth season with them, and it's been great. It's just a top-notch organization. Can't say enough good things about the program there. And they're not only are they good to us, they let us run our team the way that we want to. They have our backs in anything that we want to do with our program. It's been great. And we've been at Bantam AA for 5 seasons. So we pretty much have a fresh squad every year. We get the next birth year. This year we had 2008s. Our first year at the Avalanche, we had 2004s, and we've had every birth year leading up since. Next year we'll have 09s.
Nice.
And I'm guessing since you've been doing this a couple of years, you are probably at that point where some of these kids that you first start to coach are now getting like offer letters to play, D1, D2 or D3 hockey. And to know that you had a little bit of an impact on that must be pretty gratifying.
Sure. We had on our 06 team, two players, one just committed verbally to Providence.
Oh, sick.
And one actually, our goalie from our 06 year, was drafted by the Ottawa 67s in the OHL draft. He's still 16 or 17 years old, so he's not actually going yet. He also did, he signed like a week contract, a week-long contract this year with the Tri-City Storm out in Iowa or Nebraska, I believe. So, yeah, we have some guys that are getting some good looks. Not all of them. It's AA hockey. I think the NHL dream is pretty, I think everybody knows it's pretty hard to obtain.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You know, but we definitely have had guys through the years that have gone on to play D3 or play club hockey in college, which is awesome. I mean,
oh yeah.
Yeah. We have guys that can play the game as long as they want to at some level. If they love it.
Yeah. And I'm guessing in like the Northern Jersey / you know, Westchester or whatever, Rockland County, whatever area you want to consider yourself part of. Not too many high schools probably have teams, right?
Actually a lot do.
Oh really?
Yeah. High school hockey is big in North Jersey. And it's gotten a lot bigger in, you know, downstate New York. I went to Suffern High School, which for years and years was really like the powerhouse school south of Albany. Section 1 in New York State, they pretty much had the run of it for the better part of the 80s and 90s. And now
so that's kind of your competition then, huh? So they're probably keeping some of their kids because, right, like they have to decide if they're going to play AA or go play for their high school, right?
No, they can do both. Okay. Travel hockey and high school hockey, at least in New York, you know, there are different kind of protocols in different states. In Massachusetts, you have to make that decision. In Connecticut, I think you have to make that. In Connecticut, I think you have to commit to one or the other fully. In Massachusetts, you can be on your high school team and a travel team, but you can't play a game for each in the same day. And that, you know, will cause some rifts. In New York and New Jersey, you are free to play on both teams, free to play multiple games in a day. You know, where we're at with 14U, most of our guys are freshmen or eighth grade. You know, they aren't first or second liners on their high school team most of the time. So they're usually, you know, we tell them, you know, like, unless you're an impact player on your high school team, first or second line or top 4D, like you're definitely going to get more out of coming to your travel hockey game or practice rather than, you know, sitting on the bench for most of the night, seeing a couple shifts here and there. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And in high school, the upperclassmen are going to get the ice time.
Yeah.
You know, it, sure. It makes sense. They're developed more. They're, you know, they're throwing the body. It's just how it is. And that's another reason why we love 14U. You know, at 16U, there's a lot more conflicts. The most 16U programs will go short season so that guys can focus on high school. But if it's not a short season team, you end up with a lot of conflicts, a lot of guys, you know, missing from practice. The one year that we did 16AA, it was hard to work on the power play because we didn't have a full team for most practices, and that's tough. So we love staying at Bantam AA. It's great for that reason.
Good stuff. Love that. Yeah. Always curious how people fall into, you know, some roles that they have with coaching or, you know, scouting or whatever it may be.
Right.
Because, like, look at John Cooper with the Lightning. Like, he kind of started at that level.
Right.
And then ended up creating basically his own NHL career out of that, which is right. Wild.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And it's cool because there's even some crossover where Russ Rankin from that band, sure, Good Riddance, is like a pro scout.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like so cool to think.
He actually did, to bring it back around, he did like, I think it was a Booze Cruise virtual show during COVID. And I was like, I was peppering him in the chat on the side, just like, talk about hockey.
And well, that's cool. Like, he's a legit scout for.
He is. He was like, I don't think
a WHL team.
Yeah. He's like, I don't think most of the people here would want me to start talking about hockey.
You'd be surprised. There's some Eastern European teams that are all for it, listening to punk or weird electronic European music.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. It's great though. I had stepped back from the game after high school. I played all 4 years of high school, and Oneonta didn't have a team or a rink.
Wait, do you know that we legit have the same mascot, our colleges?
Yes, Red Dragons.
Isn't that the silliest thing ever?
That is pretty wild. It's not far apart either. It's
probably, and they're both SUNY schools.
Yep, that's super it's like, weird.
Why do you have the same mask?
They got lazy.
Super weird. Yeah.
You know how many teams in Miami? So, like, I grew up in Miami. You know how many high schools in Miami, their mascot were the Bulldogs?
Really?
There are at least 7.
Oh, my God. That's way too much.
Yeah. Seven's a high number, but it was at least 4 to 5.
Suffern Hockey, Suffern High School, we're the Mounties. And until about 96 or 98, Mountie was short for Mountaineer. And my Pee Wee hockey jersey, the logo was like this old guy with like a Beverly Hillbillies hat, smoking a pipe, holding a shotgun.
That's like a minor 49er. That's like
it was amazing. That was the Suffern Hockey logo for a long time. And then late 90s, they kind of got hip to that you couldn't do that. So they changed the long hand of Mountie to Mountain Lions. And
lame.
Yeah, kind of
I thought they were gonna give you like a Dudley Do Right type of thing.
Right. But it's unique, and we rock the Carolina blue and the blue and navy. So we were down in Chapel Hill playing a couple weeks ago and saw all that. I called it Suffern Blue out on the streets.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was good. It's a very, very distinct colors. Back in the day, I couldn't get custom gear. I had black and royal blue pads. That was the closest I could get to my jersey. You know, nowadays I could probably get a
Whatever color you want.
I could get a sick set.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but I don't really gear up anymore. I skate at practice. I've put the pads on for alumni games over the years, maybe a handful of times. But I still have my gear from high school. So when I dress up and get in goal, I look like some kind of museum exhibit. My pads break just above my knees, and they don't lay flat on the ice when I go down. I look like something out of a 90s hockey card.
I love that.
Yeah.
We were just talking to John from Point North, and he was talking about, you know, how he picked up hockey again, you know, just recently.
Right.
And same thing, like using his old gear and
right.
feeling like it was, or maybe I'm talking about the homie from Mom Jeans.
It was both of them.
Yeah. I listened to that episode.
Bart and John. John was talking about how he had cloth skates.
Oh my God.
He had the old school cloth skates.
Like the CCM tacks.
Yeah, and then Bart was saying that he had like the two-piece stick, and he tried to get a replacement for the two-piece stick, and they're like, no, they're all
carbon fiber. It's wild how expensive sticks are. The newest Bauer or CCM stick is over $300. I go into the pro shop at almost every rink. And just, you know, if I see something for like $100, like a 3-year-old model, I'll grab that. But I'm not paying $300 for a stick. That's insane. I would hate to be a hockey parent now.
But it's got the McDavid flex.
I would be screaming if my kid broke a stick out there. And it happens all the time. They break a few sticks a year. It's crazy. We had a kid come out a few years ago that had that new Bauer that had the slot in the blade.
Yep.
And that was like a $360 stick at the time. And we were skating around, you know, warming up at the beginning of practice, and we bumped into each other and he broke it across my chest. And I was like, oh, wow. That was like a $360 stick. Wow.
No Christmas for that kid.
Oh, man.
That is his Christmas.
I remember like my goalie sticks in high school were like 60, 70 bucks or something, you know, like, and I'd go through maybe two or three a year, like,
yeah,
$300 is crazy. It's wild.
And that's the problem. You're pricing out kids from.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I think it's like baseball and hockey are the two most expensive sports to get into.
I'm surprised about baseball because other than the bats,
gloves, cleats,
ice time too is
ice time. Yeah.
Crazy expensive. You know, that's like what most of the season tuition goes towards. You know, my brother and I were actually coached a few years of high school hockey, just north of us, Monroe Woodbury High School, who now doesn't have a hockey program anymore, but we were skating up in Newburgh, which is up close to Poughkeepsie, and budgeting out the ice time for a high school program, it was just like, wow, this is just so expensive. But it's just normal for ice, at least in this area, to be like $500 an hour, or like for an hour and 15. It's crazy. It adds up. It adds up like crazy. And actually the last year that we did that was the COVID season, and the school district had decided that none of their winter sports teams were going to play games, like not going to compete, but could practice. So we were practicing twice a week at Bear Mountain State Park, which is an outdoor rink with chain link fence instead of glass. It was bitter cold.
Nice.
The wind would blow the puck off your stick. It was, the ice had just a different feel to it. You'd be like chopping it up. Like, it was super hard, and it like flaked up different than normal indoor ice. That was just an experience. Every week I was trying something different. Gloves under the gloves, hot hands in the gloves, just anything. It was so brutal.
It's cool to see some of those outdoor ice rinks, though, because there's a few of them in Buffalo when I was, going.
Riverworks.
Yeah, it's just so cool to see, because on Long Island, I've never saw that. Right. Like, I never saw an outdoor rink.
There's
roller rinks, but yeah, not ice.
There are a few, like, open side, like, with a roof, like Ebersol in White Plains is, you know, still a mostly outdoor rink, even though it's covered. But you definitely get a good fog game in it in White Plains, where like the foot above the ice is just fog.
Oh, fog. And you can't really see the puck. That's be a terrible game to like be a goaltender in, because where do you go? You can't make a play.
I always think about the rink in Cranford, New Jersey, which I think is partially outdoor. I think it's open on the ends. And when I was playing, we'd get like an early slot, and the away goalie would face the sun coming up for two periods, and it would just be a big glare.
Oof.
Coming right at, like, I couldn't even figure out where the blue line was when the rush was coming down. Like, I'd, you know, try to set my angle to where they would enter the zone, and I wasn't even sure where the blue line was. It was,
I just couldn't see it.
Yeah, it was bad. But that's, you wild. Know, all kinds of you know, elements,
shenanigans.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, good stuff. You know, we've been chatting for about an hour and 10. I guess before we let you go, you know, we mentioned the two festivals in Europe. Anything else on the horizon with timeshares for the rest of 2023?
we're still working it out. Like I said, it's a busy year for our personal lives. So Europe is, you know, something that we're definitely looking forward to, and we've had to shuffle some things around. But we are already starting to write songs, to do a new album at some point. You know, no timeline on that, but that's something that we plan to do. We also had 3 EPs come out starting in 2018, and then another one that came out during the break there. I think probably the next thing you'll see from us at some point is like a collection of those, maybe on one vinyl. Again, no solid plans for that, but that's something that we've been planning to do since we started working on those EPs. And I think that'll definitely be that's definitely something that we've wanted to do, and we'll fill the gap in between Limb coming out and then whatever is next as far as a full length. So yeah. Be on the lookout for that. Be on the lookout for more music from us. We love making music together. So, you know, even just getting into the studio and getting to work on stuff is, again, just a gift to be able to do that. So we're looking forward to that. We love playing together.
And just out of curiosity, it looked like when you guys started releasing music, you were like heavy on the split, but then haven't had splits in a while. So are you ever considering maybe doing another split down the road?
I would not, you know, rule it out. I think that, the Captain split came about, I think Kiss of Death Records planned on doing our first record, but wanted to kind of dip a toe in first and get a split going. And then the other two that we did were part of series. Like the split with Dividers was part of a series that a label in the UK did, where it was like a US and a UK band on every split. And
that's cool.
Like I think 3 series, and then maybe did a box set. The split with Luther was part of some guys from New York that had a venue called Suburbia, Long Island guys that moved to Brooklyn and had a venue called Suburbia. And then they did, it was a box set of splits of bands that had all come through and played Suburbia over the years. So that was, you know, another cool, bigger project that the split was a part of. I mean, splits are cool. There have been some great splits between bands over the years. I mean,
I think it's a dying art, though. I don't see it as often as I used to.
It is. I think, from our perspective, we work really hard at crafting our songs, and we want to be proud of every song that we put out into the world. And I feel like those releases, they don't get as much, you know, attention, or,
yeah,
you know, not as many people find their way to them. So joke we used to make is a split is a great way to take a song that you're very proud of and make sure nobody ever hears it.
Which is so crazy too, because I remember like years ago, like
I would
buy just the 7 inches of split, like just bands that did a split. And the one that always comes to mind is the, Touche Amour did a shit ton of splits with a whole bunch of people.
Right.
But the one that is just kind of like etched into my mind is the one where they did a cover of Tidal Fight's Crescent Shaped Depression. And Tidal Fight did a cover of a Touche Amour song. I can't remember what song Tidal Fight covered, but that one, the one with Pianos Become the Teeth in Touche Amour, the one with, I think Touche Amour did one with like the Casket Lottery, and I think they even did one with like Law Dispute. Right. But, like, I love those. Like, it's some of my favorite songs came from splits.
Don't get me wrong. I think it's an awesome way to, spread out you know, bands and get more listeners. I think there are people who probably found our band because they were already fans of Captain We're Sinking.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I think
or Lucifer. Like,
it kind of goes back to the flyers on the TV at Zoomies. It's,
yeah,
you know, kind of the old way, and nothing wrong with it. It just, it's not the same as it was. I you know, it's still cool.
Yeah. I wish more bands would do it. I just think like recent, like the most recent one that comes to mind is when This Wildlife and Real Friends did one and they just covered each other's songs. And I thought that was super cool, but that's like the last one I've seen from this scene of music. And that's going back like 8 years.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah. You know, Spotify and it's more of a playlist based culture now than like an album based culture. You know, I mean, I still appreciate a full album. You know, that's how I want to absorb music. You know,
even, but you would think now that you mentioned that, like, it would make splits a lot easier if it was just like a digital split, and you don't even have to worry about a vinyl. Like, look at that.
Taking it back into hockey for a second. Every year, every season, we do we have an Instagram account for our team, and we do a player profile for every player, and they get to, you know, name their favorite artist, their favorite movie, favorite subject in school or whatever. You know, this season, not a single player mentioned a band.
Oh,
you know, that's not. It is what it is. They like what they like. I'm not going to be a grumpy old man about it, but you know.
No, I feel like kids aren't playing in bands anymore. Feel, you know, it seems like we're like the old time gatekeepers that are trying to keep it going, but yet like if it's not kids playing shows and doing that, then who knows what's going to happen to this genre of music. Gonna be like grunge.
Open minded. I like some of the stuff they listen to. I'm not, you know. Sometimes they don't realize that I know the song they're listening to quite well. You know, I have to be cool about it though. I'm coach.
Amen.
I'm trying to remember. There was a band that came out with a four-way split because I remember four-way splits were like four-way super popular for cool. A little bit.
Yeah,
and I think it might have been Ivy League, Turnover, someone else. I'm like, shit, I can't remember that this split. I have it on vinyl. I can't remember what it was. But Maker, Such Gold, Ivy League, and Turnover. That's who it was.
Yeah. Very, very early timeshare show in Oneonta off campus was Maker and Such Gold. It was at the Oneonta Moose Lodge.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I miss Moose Lodge shows.
Oh, yeah.
VFWs.
Yeah.
Dude, I could be totally misspeaking, and if Tom was on here right now, like, he would be able to chime in, but I'm pretty sure one of Tom's bands had a split with Such Gold.
Could have been.
Yeah.
Could have been. Such Gold did splits with, like, almost everybody.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it did. And I'm, like, this is before people even bought vinyl again. So this is like probably 2007 or 2008 before it like really boomed. And I'm pretty sure it was like pressed and no one obviously bought it because no one was buying vinyl then. But
luckily all of our vinyl splits have found homes or they're up on Discogs maybe, but I don't have any copies to sell anymore, which is, you know, that's good. So, but yeah, we had to put those up on Spotify for ourselves. You know, all the streaming platforms. We had to get them up there on our own, or they were never going to be heard.
Yeah, that's the hard part. Yeah. Especially in a world of singles right now.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, you know, Mike, it definitely was a blast. You know, you are the like pinnacle guest where you have the hockey and the music knowledge, and you
both worlds colliding.
Both worlds colliding. Yeah. These are the easy conversations to have, where it's just like
we probably could have done 4 hours.
Easy.
Yep.
But I do appreciate you spending your time with us, and I'm sorry to hear about your early exit from the playoffs. And
boys,
hopefully you guys bounce back next year. The group you got coming in, goes a little bit further, and you know, I hope that these festivals in Europe just kick ass and kind of just ignite the flame a little bit to keep it going a couple more years. And just like you said, that really resonated with me. Like, every gig is a gift. I love that. I hope every band takes that to heart. And
that's
just
ours. We have that. That's our well, trademark.
We were talking to the No Trigger Boys, and they call it Vacation Core.
Yeah, I love that. Love those guys. That's another band that came through Oneonta, and we're still tight with them. We love.
Yeah, we had Bones on not too long ago.
Yeah, and I feel like that's the perfect way to just view playing music in your, you know, late 20s, 30s, and so on.
Didn't Pat from the Sweller say the same thing too? It's just kind of like PTO with your buddies.
Jono said the same thing.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
I've never received PTO while playing music. So that's something I've never experienced. So, and now I work for myself. So
yeah, it's different.
Yeah. Must be nice.
It's not bad. Not bad.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, hockey's a beautiful game. It'll rip your fucking heart out of your beating, chest.
Sure will.
At least once a year. So music at least rips it out of your chest all the time.
Yeah.
Touche. Well, Mike, thanks again. We'll let you go. Safe travels over the summer, and we'll stay in touch, man.
Guys, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Peace.